Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. I hope you've had a good week. It's been a really interesting week in the Sober Club. It's funny how things tend to sort of go in themes, or it certainly feels that way. And there's been just a lot of people talking about how they've really realised how their emotions impact them once they stop drinking. I know I spoke a little bit about this last week as well. I mean, it feels like I talk about it all the time, I suppose, with clients and because of the work that I do. But it is such a thing that, as you know, we're never taught to that emotions are okay, are we? Some of you may remember the interview I did with Carla McLaren. If you haven't heard it, go back and have a listen to it. I mention it a lot. She was just so fascinating. She's the author of a book called Embracing Anxiety. And she does a whole load of work around emotions. And her kind of thesis, if you like, is all emotions are welcome. All obstacles are welcome too, but all emotions are welcome. And that's just not something that sits naturally with us. Of course we don't want to feel angry or upset or guilty or ashamed. We hate those emotions. And that's probably one of the reasons, if not the main reason, why we reach for drink in the first place. You know, those of us that were kind of, you know, we were using drinking to step away from anxiety or stress or feelings of guilt or whatever it was. And so, you know, when we stop having that, you know, that poison to go to, we have to sit with some of these emotions. And we can feel very raw and very kind of chaotic in those early weeks. And a few people have mentioned this in the Sober Club, you know, and said, okay, I mean, one woman was sort of 50 days in and kind of feeling as though she ought to be feeling so much better. But actually, the pink cloud, that initial feeling of euphoria had passed by, back to real life. And that sense of feeling, what now then? You know, when the tricky emotions come in, what now? Because let's face it, everyone's got stuff going on. And really what we need to do, of course, is that lovely expression, feel all the feels. We need to be able to sit with our emotions, accept them. All emotions are welcome, and let them pass through. You know, the same way as we can learn to notice our thoughts and let those pass by as well. You know, the lovely phrase, this too shall pass. But what we tend to do is we get caught up and we believe that we are the emotion. You know, instead of being able to just accept, okay, at this moment I'm feeling guilty. Let's have a look at what that's about. We tend to just assume that we are guilty. We are a guilty person. We are an angry, you know, I am an angry person. I've heard so many people say that to me. So it's a real thing. And when we can start to recognize the importance of just facing up to our emotions, then they lose some of their power. You know, they lose their emotional charge when we're able to face them. And we do become much more resilient. I know I've said that a ton of times. I'm launching a new kind of online group coaching program, by the way, which will start the first or second week of October. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, there'll be some more detail about it. And this really came about because, of course, not everyone wants to do one-to-one coaching because of finances or because of time. And I figured what's been happening for me, certainly over the last few months when I've been working with clients, is I've found that some of the strategies and the daily practices and the tools and the tips that we're able to discuss and I'm able to pass on because of my many years working with so many different modalities have been the real key to their success, in inverted commas, the real key to them feeling just so much calmer, so much more in control, so much more resilient, and kind of enabling them to empower themselves, really, so that when the tricky thoughts, when the cravings, when the, I don't know, just the sadness even starts to come in, we can coach ourselves. We can actually go within and ask our wise inner guru, okay, now let me remind myself, what are are the resources I need here? What can I do here? So anyways, we've got a new online course, a short online course starting in October called Tapping Into Freedom, The Secrets of Sustainable Sobriety. And I'll be teaching some of these little tips and techniques, simple, manageable things that you can put into your daily routine that really make all the difference for you to do what you've said you want to do. That ultimately is it, right? So you start to take back some control over your own thoughts and your own feelings and your own emotions. And there'll be a really good mix of sort of very practical stuff, including EFT. This is incorporating alcohol-free with EFT, emotional freedom technique. So we'll do a little bit of that. We'll teach some of that, but also many other little practical tips and techniques, and some that are a little bit more on the spiritual side. But everything, you know, very simple, very manageable, that you can bring into your life. So if that sounds of interest, have a look at thesoberclub.com. You'll see the page for the course there, or you can always drop me a message, of course. And then I'm going to follow that on with Tapping Into Self-Care and Sobriety, because of course there may be many people who do feel solid in their sobriety. They do feel that they've got that piece, but they still get anxious. They still know they're not putting in the right amount of self-care. There's still some gaps, if you like. They know they want to scale up and live their best life without the booze, but they could do with a little bit of help too. Really cement some good new habits in, because that's how we can literally change our neural pathways. That's what's so exciting about this work, is we really can change what's going on. So a couple of online courses coming up, which will have live interactive sessions, by the way. It's not just watching videos by any means. So drop me a line if you're interested in that, send you more details, or go to thesoberclub.com. Let me read you a clip of one post that came through. Somebody said, removing the alcohol after a career, as she puts it, of 35 plus years of consuming a toxic poison took its toll on me. I didn't know how to feel, and the feelings I did feel were alien as well as horrible. With the support and the content in the Sober Club, I learned how to administer the self-care, and that was new to me. Yeah, that puts it so well. I didn't know how to feel. That's it, really. We've been so used to just reaching for a drink instead. We have to actually learn again how to feel. So I'm super excited about today's guest, because I've been talking about trauma, whether that's trauma with a big T or trauma with a little T, for a long time. As most of you know, I've trained in family constellations work. We will be putting in another session, by the way, in our events page. At the moment, we don't have anything lined up, but we're going to have another in-person day of family constellations in early November. And before that, we're going to do an online session. It's not quite the same, but nevertheless, it can be very powerful. So if that's of interest, again, check out the events page and we'll give you more details of that soon. Just register your interest. But anyways, the guy that I have worked, came across Alex Howard's work, and honestly, just so impressive, the stuff he does, just so impressive. And I've seen him be part of summits and webinars and all kinds of things, with just always talking about these so many different aspects of trauma and therapeutic coaching. I know he's also done some work with Gabor Maté. He's just so knowledgeable in this area. So I'm really grateful to be able to interview Alex on the podcast. So he is the creator of therapeutic coaching, founder of the Optimum Health Clinic and Conscious Life. So enjoy the interview.
Welcome, Alex. I'm so glad you were willing to join us. I've been wanting to chat to you for absolutely ages.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
I'm trying to remember when I came across some of your stuff. I think it was something that you were part of where Gabor Maté was also speaking. So it'd be something linked to trauma, I'm guessing. And that's really the kind of area, you know, I'd love to chat to you about, you know, your area of expertise. Would you mind just sharing just a little bit about your own story first? You know, what kind of, you know, what led you to be doing this work? I always think it's fascinating to put it in context.
Sure. Well, I think, like a lot of people doing work in this space, I didn't sit there in a kind of career planning session in my teenage years and go, oh, I'd love to become an expert.
I'll be a trauma expert. Yeah.
So like a lot of people, I came to this work really through the challenges and difficulties in my own life. And the very short version of that is I had a chronic illness as a teenager. I suffered from ME, otherwise known as chronic fatigue syndrome. And that set me on a very, at the time, very, very challenging journey, but in hindsight, a very powerful journey of really exploring my own healing journey on many different levels. And so, of course, that was very much a physical healing journey, but there were also emotional elements to it. But really, my interest in trauma came on the other side of that journey when I'd got my physical health back and I was living in my kind of early mid-20s. Lots of things on the outside world that looked like great successes. I'd started the Optimum Health Clinic, and at that time it was in Harley Street in London, and was growing very fast, and I was doing lots of sort of public speaking, and I had this fancy apartment and fast car and, you know, all the things that I thought that I should have to be successful, all the things that I thought that were important in my life. And having been on this whole inner journey, I was like, yep, tick that, done that. But the problem was that I had all the things that I thought that I wanted, but actually my inner life was perhaps the most difficult place it had been, in many ways more challenging than the physical healing journey, because at least at that point I had a reason why I felt so at times anxious and depressed and overwhelmed. But to have my outside world look all the ways that I thought it should look, but to be suffering from severe anxiety and panic attacks, to be an utter inability to have an intimate relationship longer than a few months. It got to the point, not only was it quite embarrassing because I was supposed to be the expert in these things, but also got me deeply curious as to what was really going on beneath the surface. And I think one of the challenges with trauma is that often we don't recognize that we have it. It's sort of like a secret suffering that many of us can experience in different ways, that presents in lots of different ways. And I know that a key part for your audience is looking at alcoholism and addiction and so on. And that's one very classic way that trauma can present, that we have feelings and emotions that perhaps haven't been made sense of, haven't been processed, haven't been healed, that are then governing and driving many of the actions that we're making in our lives that are really ways to try and self-medicate. They're ways to try and to manage and to work with those feelings that are causing a great deal of suffering. And so really, that was how my journey was initiated. It was finding myself in my mid-20s with all the things I thought I wanted, but clearly having some quite deep and unresolved traumas. And that, that catalyzed a very, very committed journey of healing from that.
I mean, that sums it up really well, actually, because, you know, of course, that's the thing for so many people, where we're seeking something. We're always seeking the next thing. It's always, oh, well, I'll be happy when I've got the house or the car or the holiday, or, you know, I'll do that when the kids have left home, whatever it might be that we're thinking. It's always on the end of a stick somewhere, you know. What I find really interesting is that, you know, as you say, we don't often people don't recognize that they have any kind of trauma. And that can partly be, I'm guessing, because, you know, we now know that, well, I know you'll go on to explain it in a much better way than I can. But of course, you know, we can have big T trauma, we can have little T trauma. And of course, there are people who absolutely know that they have, you know, one or more massive, massive things that made an impact in their life. But there are many people who would aren't their answer to the question, you know, how was your childhood, would be, oh, all good, you know. And yet when we dig deep, of course there's stuff going down, right?
Well, I think that's also part of the challenge here, that I knew that I'd had some difficult experiences in my childhood, but as we do, part of the brilliance of the human experience is we normalize. Yes. And so we adapt and we adjust to the experiences we have, and then we just know that as being normal. You know, it's funny, we're recording this interview having just had a really intense heat wave in London. And there are people that live in countries where that is just how it is every day. They wouldn't notice that.
Yeah.
Whereas we're all just completely overwhelmed by this, to the point that our internal comms channel at work, we've got quite an international company, the people in parts of the States are just laughing at the Brits that are just going on about, oh my God, it's 35 degrees outside, it's the most, because they've normalized and they've adapted to the environment being a certain way. You know, part of the challenge from my experience was that I've normalized to the events that have happened in my childhood, and I'm not seeing them as anything particularly big or dramatic. You know, things like my father left soon after I was born, my sister had some quite severe mental health issues, that, you know, it could have been much worse, and yes, it could have been better. But I think when we talk about trauma, one of the things that is important is to define what we actually mean. Because I think often people think about trauma as being the events.
Yes.
And there's been some fantastic research on adverse childhood experiences. And I think that work has been very helpful and very important.
Yeah.
But to me, trauma actually has four different stages of what happens. There's the events. And as you said, they could be big T trauma events, very obvious things like going through, you know, abandonment of a parent or some sort of physical, sexual, emotional abuse, something that's an obvious trauma. It could be very subtle. It could be parents that are just not quite responding to our emotional needs in the way that we need, or being taught that our self-worth is tied to what we do and what we achieve, not inherent to who we are.
Mm.
So there's those events. But then the way that the people around us respond to those events and the way that we respond to those events is incredibly important, because you can have five children go through the same event but be impacted in very different ways.
Yeah.
And what's particularly important to that response is whether we have three core emotional needs and whether those emotional needs are being met at the time or not. So those needs are the need for boundaries, being taught that we can say no and that we can say yes, that the people around us, if we're particularly small and we're not old enough to be able to put those boundaries in place, the people that are caregiving for us can put those boundaries in place. So they can say no or they can say yes on our behalf. So we have the need for boundaries, and we have the need for safety. And that safety is not just a physical safety, but it's also an emotional safety. And so particularly as small children, that's having a nervous system that we can co-regulate with. That could be mum, it could be dad, it could be grandparents, it could be foster parents, but it's having a nervous system which teaches our nervous system that it's safe. And if we get activated, that we can connect to that nervous system, and that then allows our system to come back to being in a state of safety. As we get older, of course, we hopefully learn to self-regulate our nervous system. We're not then dependent upon others to be able to help us do that. So there's the need for boundaries. There's the need for safety. There's also the need for love. And that's not just the words, I love you, but it's actually the actions of love. And actions of love, things like caregivers that are sincerely interested in us, that they want to spend time with us, that we feel special, that we feel cared for, that they have enough sensitivity to enter our world and be interested in our inner environment. So if we have these three core emotional needs of boundary, safety, and love being met, we might go through some events which are difficult. They may be very overwhelming, but our ability to process and how we're impacted by those events is determined by these three core emotional needs. In a sense, what they do is they give us a resilience. They give us a capacity to meet those challenges of life. So just to backtrack, we've got the events, we've got the response, we've then got how that impacts upon our nervous system.
Yeah.
So if the event happens and the response is not what we need, our nervous system will change. It will likely speed up. I talk a lot in my work about a maladaptive stress response. This is a way of responding to stress that has become maladaptive.
Mm.
It's effectively the homeostatic balance of our nervous system is overstimulated.
Yeah, so we're in fight or flight or fear mode the whole time.
Yeah, and it might be fight or flight. It might be a freeze. It might be a shutdown state that we go into. that impact on our nervous system can be lifelong unless we actively learn things to shift and to change that. There's then the outcomes in our lives, effectively the strategies that we develop in an attempt to manage what's happened to our nervous system. And this is where, for example, we may develop coping strategies, going back to what we said a little bit earlier, of self-medicating through alcohol, or we may develop coping strategies of winning love by constant achievement and performance in our life, or coping strategies around constantly having to strategize and think about all the different things that might happen because we're trying to think our way to a feeling of safety. The thing that I think is so important about understanding these different stages of what happens in trauma is that the thing that really causes the suffering in our lives is not the event. And that's not to let people off the hook, which have been perpetrators or have done things that that maybe shouldn't have happened. But it's not actually the event which is caused. The event may be very traumatic in the moment. There may have been physical, mental, emotional pain in that moment. But the place that these experiences really do sometimes end up shaping our lives is the ways that our nervous system changes, and all the things that we then try to do to address that and manage that, many of which can end up causing more suffering, that effectively end up perpetuating this cycle of suffering. So let's go back to, you know, let's take an example. So let's say the example is that someone had emotionally abusive things that happened in their childhood, where perhaps it was coercive, manipulative, there was ways that were quite confusing and quite challenging and difficult. And they weren't taught to say no, or they weren't able to say no. They didn't feel safe, and they didn't get the love and the soothing that they needed to learn that who they were as a person was not defined by these things that happened to them. Their nervous system then became dysregulated. It may be that it just got stuck on an on state. It may be that it was more easily jarred, or maybe more easily impacted. And then this person learned, the way to manage this dysregulation of my nervous system is through drinking alcohol, or is, or I'm not worthy and my feelings don't matter. And so I end up in perhaps destructive relationships that go round and round and round in the same cycles. The healing of that is not necessarily, we can't change the event that happened, but what we can do is we can learn to shift our nervous system, and we can learn to meet these core emotional needs in more healthy ways in our lives. And then as we do that, these behaviors, these outcomes that have been created no longer are necessary, because they're no longer the best. Our system will choose the best option it has available. We start to have better options and better ways of managing our experience. We no longer then need to choose those destructive habits as defaults in our lives.
That's such a good explanation for that. I really appreciate it. And you know, I do some work with family constellations, and it's always fascinating there to see that, as you say, it's not the trauma, it's what you made it mean. It's what it ended up meaning for you. And the really fascinating piece, of course, is that these, you know, these beliefs that we create and form, not only sort of can not only infiltrate into every area of our lives, but we then can, then we pass them on, and then we pass them on to our kids and other generations. So it's such a so amazing work when you can actually start the healing, right? And you must see this all the time. That's what's so incredible, that is that actually we can move forward from this trauma.
Yes. And I think what also is quite difficult is that sometimes we can really recognize that certain things we experienced as children were unhealthy, and we almost swing the pendulum the other way. You know, so one of the things that I think is quite common in the current generations is that there's people may have grown up with very dictatorial and rigid boundaried parents, and therefore I'm not going to give my children boundaries because I found those boundaries too bruising. And then you create a new issue, which is children which actually don't feel safe because they haven't got the holding of those edges and those boundaries. And so my observation is that the way to not pass on our traumas to our children is not just intellectually understanding. Because if we only intellectually understand, what happens is we make kind of reactive, and because we're still responding from that place of emotional trauma.
Mm.
So ultimately, the only way to not pass on the path, of course, we can do a certain amount for behavioral change, but to really make the change, we have to do that deeper emotional healing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think really interesting how you sort of touched on there the link between what's going on in the mind and the body. You know, you've got this physiological response. And it's so interesting, isn't it? Just how much... you know, as you say, we try to think our way out of something, whereas actually what's going on is a complete physiological response. Our body's doing something, you know, that loop where we, you know, our mind says something, so it literally affects our body and creates some kind of dis-ease or illness or stress. And I think that you know, we really do need to honor that connection a little more than we sometimes do.
Well, I think that there's something really important about recognizing the wisdom that is there in these responses. And so, for example, if we have a feeling that comes up of a feeling that I don't feel safe, for example, that rather than seeing that as something that's broken to get away from, to trying to think our way out of it, to actually become really curious and be, wow, I have a feeling in my body right now that I don't feel safe. Yeah. And I look around this environment and I am safe in this moment. I'm not in any kind of real kind of danger, but I don't feel safe. Why? Why don't I feel safe in this moment? And that has the potential to be the portal. It has the potential to be the gateway into understanding why that response and why those feelings and those emotions come up. Mm. And that's where, if we can learn to not just defend and escape away from what's happening, but actually to see it as its own wisdom, and that within that is some really important information. Because to run that example a bit more, it might be, I don't feel safe. Okay, well, I wonder why I don't feel safe, but also, where's my nervous system at right now? Well, hang on, my whole system's running really fast. Well, my system's running really fast. I'm probably pumping a lot of adrenaline and cortisol and various stress hormones. They're designed for action. They're designed to help me respond to a danger. If there isn't actually a danger, what's actually happening is my body is running all of this stuff. So what I need right now is to slow that down. And that's where, you know, there's many, many different techniques that one can do that. A lot of them that have origins in mindfulness and meditation and so on. And so if in that moment I can actually work to re-regulate my nervous system and actually calm and settle that feeling of safety, which I'm trying to get to, actually may start to arise. It may be that as I start to reduce the production of adrenaline and cortisol and my system starts to come into more of a calm, healing state, the thing that I've been trying to get through action or by avoiding and running away, maybe it's actually there and it's actually available. And I think that one of the most powerful things that we can realize on a healing journey with trauma is that as children, we are dependent upon the people around us to meet our emotional needs.
Yeah.
As adults, we can learn to meet those emotions for ourselves.
Yeah.
And that is a very, very different and a very powerful
place. Well, it is. And that's such an interesting point. And one thing that I find myself saying quite a lot is that when people have started drinking, you know, in their teens, there's actually very little emotional maturity, because just about everything that we've gone through, we've done it under the haze of booze. You know, everything, our first relationship, you know, sex, marriage, parties, your career, everything, your graduation to your career, whatever it is. And there's often been very little, there are very, very few times in our life when anything has happened to us and we haven't just thought, oh, I know how we handle this. You know, we reach for a drink, whether it's, you know, celebration or commiseration, whatever it is, we just reach for a drink. So actually, when we stop doing that, we really do, in many cases, have to relearn how to just actually sit with an emotion and notice what it is. So as you say, it's that putting that pause in and allowing that to be the opening to actually start to look at what might be going on.
I think so. And I think also if one finds oneself in a situation where they recognize that they're drinking too much alcohol and they make a conscious decision they want to drink less, but they're unable to easily follow through on that decision. Yes, there is a certain amount of chemical addiction, which can take a little bit of willpower to move beyond. But most people, maybe that's exaggerated, a lot of people will be able to at that point go, I'm going to stop, and they'll be able to stop. If someone finds that very difficult to do, there is something that use of alcohol is giving them.
It's giving them, yeah, exactly.
Which needs to be understood, right? Exactly. And of course, there's many different things that might be. But one of the things that often it is a way of changing our emotional state, yeah, exactly, a way of changing how we feel. And that might be going out and not feeling confident and becoming more confident. It might be feeling anxious and becoming calmer. It might be being low mood and giving a lift and then being able to have fun. There's lots of different ways that it may allow us to move and to change our state. The place that we want to get to is A, we have other ways of changing our state, but also B, our default, our homeostasis that we come back to is one of happiness and is one of spaciousness and one of ease. But the challenge is when we have unhealed emotional trauma, the closer we get to ourselves, the closer we get to that emotional trauma, which is why we then try to find the ways to get away from it.
Yeah.
So it's the gateway, but it's also the place that some work.
Absolutely. It's interesting. You know, sometimes people will actually say to me, I'm really ready to stop this. I want things to be different. But what's holding me back is I know that I'm going to have to face stuff that I don't want to face. We can see it in the distance and we don't want to have to go there. Wouldn't it be great if some of this stuff was taught in schools and we were able to encourage children to sit with their feelings rather than whatever it is going on, immediately reaching for something, whether it's, you know, a sweet because you've hurt your knee or whatever the hell, you know?
You know, I think it is starting to happen.
Is it?
In certain places. So my eldest daughter, who's just turned 11, is at a special educational needs school for children with very severe dyslexia. And one of the things that they do a lot is they talk about zones of regulation. And they talk about, and I can't remember the exact terms they use for it, but it's basically, are you overactivated or actually are you too low energy? And how do you get to what they call the green zone? Right. And there's a lot of dialogue around about being ready to learn. Like, are you in the state that you need to be? Mm-hmm. And of course, with these kids that have these quite difficult educational needs, it makes an enormous difference and it's super important, particularly if you've got kids that have got ADHD, for example. Mm-hmm. It's super hard for them to be able to just sit and be present. But the more awareness and the more dialogue there is, of course, that makes a world of difference. The challenge is that you can't teach this stuff very well unless you're living it.
So absolutely.
You know, otherwise, it's just words, you know, and it doesn't, and the words might be helpful, but the words don't really, I mean, you do family conservations work. Of course, one of the things that you know from that is that people aren't actually in their bodies and aren't actually in their experience. Totally. Nothing's really happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you find supports the healing then? I'm sure there are many, many ways, but what stands out for you?
So I think the first thing is we have to have awareness of what's happening. And I think people in my body of work get very sick of me saying, if you can see it, you don't have to be it.
But
that awareness allows us to have, at least to have choices, even if the choices are not always easy. And even if old choices have a lot of momentum behind them, we have to work hard to move in different directions. But the awareness does start to give us choices. I think the next thing that needs to happen is we need to have strategies and tools to be able to shift what's happening in our nervous system. Going back to what I was saying earlier around when we're young, when we're small children, we co-regulate with our caregivers. We need to learn to self-regulate. That's a really important tool to be able to have, that when our system is overactivated, or if it's too low energy, that we have ways that we can moderate and we can impact the state that we're in. We then need to have ways of breaking the habits and the patterns. And so many people will be familiar with the science of neuroplasticity, where neurons that fire together wire together. When we have particular habits of behavior or habits of how we respond, we condition and we train certain responses as a result of doing that. So we need to have ways of, yes, having the awareness, and yes, having ways of being able to calm and settle our system. But we also need to be able to catch those patterns and to retrain different responses in ourselves. What that then hopefully allows us to do is it allows us to work with some of the surface stuff, which then allows us to do some of the deeper emotional healing that needs to happen. That there's likely, you know, in a sense, we all walk around our lives with a big black sack of all these emotions that we've sort of shoved away and not dealt with. And the reason why, you can be driving around a roundabout thinking you're in a relatively calm mood, and then someone cuts you up on the inside and you start honking your horn and trying to find a place to pull over so you can go and shoot the person. At least that might be the instinct of what's happening, is that black sack just opened. And maybe in that moment, someone didn't see you, feeling seen is a big trigger for you. Suddenly all of that stuff starts to come flooding out. And so we need to metabolize and process and digest that emotional material. But you know, the thing from my observation, which I find is very helpful to recognize, is that healing and processing that material doesn't require us to do something that's complicated and difficult. It requires us to create the environment and the circumstances for a natural process to be able to happen. Mm. It's just like when we eat a meal, okay, you have to chew on it and you have to swallow, and you ideally aren't doing it whilst you're running a marathon. Like, you're giving your nervous system a chance. But that whole process of breaking down and metabolizing and taking nutrients out and then expelling out, that's a process that, as long as you let it happen, will happen. The same is true when it comes to doing our emotional healing work. We might need to chew on it, might need to talk about it, we might need to think about it, we might need to reflect on it, we might need to swallow that, we might need to let go a little bit, we might need to kind of create some space inside of us. But the actual healing work, it having done this work with so many thousands of people over the years, there's a kind of beautiful thing that happens when you, and you'll know this again from family constellations, that you create the space in the moment, then the healing happens by itself.
Yeah.
And people sometimes will think, well, I don't know how to do it. You actually don't need to know how to do it. Mm. What you need to know how to do is how to create the space and the environment internally for that natural healing process to be able to kick in.
Yeah.
And to go back to what we talked about a bit earlier about these three core emotional needs, that's a big part of this. It's developing those boundaries with other, but also boundaries with ourselves. Sometimes we have to tell ourselves to stop and to commit to something. Creating the safety internally and having an internal environment which is loving and curious and sensitized, that will then allow that emotional healing work to happen. That might look like tears coming up. It might look like rage coming out. It might look like, sometimes energy comes out different to how it goes in. Sometimes we just laugh it out. There's all kinds of different ways that energy can move.
Yeah.
And then the kind of final stage is really, how do we then choose to live in our lives on the other side of this? Because hopefully what happens is, as we do our trauma healing, we start to make our life decisions and life choices from different places. We're weighing up different things. Suddenly we're not making all of our choices about how can we try and find safety in the outside world, or we're not making all of our choices about how are we going to win love from other people. And that's the bit which to me is so exciting as a kind of practitioner and as a teacher, is yes, doing the trauma healing work is really important, but what really matters is, how is someone's life transformed on the other side?
Yeah. How are we going to live consciously with all that? Yeah, absolutely. Love it. Thank you for explaining it so wonderfully. And I really appreciate your, you make it super clear, which is great. So tell us about your, what you offer, your programs, and how people can work with you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, the easiest way to find me is just at my website, alexhoward.com. What people will find there is a three-part video series that goes into what we talked about here in quite a bit more detail. And I, what I was touching on here was the reset methodology of to recognize, to examine, to stop, to work with emotions and then transform one's life on the other side. So that video series, which is free, goes into that in a lot more detail. If people want to do more in-depth work with me, the Reset Program is a 12-week online-based program, which really looks at how do we reset the impacts of trauma. And the other thing people can check out, if people are interested in the therapeutic coaching methodology, at therapeuticcoaching.com, we train practitioners in a two-year program in this methodology. My pet hobby is that I film. I have a team that film me working with people therapeutically. So we have, obviously they're real, they're not actors, like real people going through a therapeutic journey, and we film the sessions. And how we like to think about it is, the people that may be unsure about whether they want to go into therapeutic work, or people that are maybe sure they don't feel that they're ready for that, they can come on a journey by watching other people do some of this work. And I hear a lot that can be quite transformational for people. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that, all of this with us, Alex. I really appreciate it. It's been great to chat to you. And I look forward to seeing more of the magic you create. Let's chat in a year and see where you think things have changed. It'd be amazing actually to see, because there's definitely so much more interest in all of this now than if we'd spoken 5 years ago, for example. Would you agree?
I think so. It's funny, those of us that have been in this, I think it's nearly 2 decades now that I've been doing this work. And it's like suddenly everyone's like,
finally.
But it's great. And what it also does is it brings, by bringing more interest and more awareness around it, it also helps all of us learn more as well. And as much as I take pride in my work as a teacher in this area, I still consider myself very much a student as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Alex. So we'll put those links in our show notes. And just another mention for Family Constellations, if it does interest you, if you're in the UK and you want to do one of our sessions, I work with a leading trauma expert. We will do a Family Constellations workshop, which will probably be in Hertfordshire early November. So register your interest for that. Just drop me a message. You can always find me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. And we're going to do an online session before that as well. So register your interest there. One thing that I didn't mention in that interview, but I remember reading in the press just a few days ago, was about Bono, the lead singer of U2. And I don't know why this came about. He was obviously doing an interview, but I read that he talked about how his mother died when he was 14. She actually, I think I'm right in saying that he said she died at her own father's funeral. I'm pretty sure that was what he'd said. I remember him saying in this piece that he doesn't have very many memories about his mother. But importantly, she was never spoken about in the household. Just didn't really think of her, didn't mention her. I suppose it was just too painful. You know, he said he and his brothers were, you know, three Irish guys, just avoided the pain, really. And that's the kind of thing that certainly used to go on. And I guess to some extent, it perhaps still does in some families. But when you look at things like family constellations, you start to realise that the past does catch up with you. Trauma does catch up with you. And, you know, in terms of honouring sort of family systems, it's so important. I thought that was so, you know, really so poignant. What a thing, just that someone so important in your life has died, but you never think of them. Anyways, it's an interesting phenomenon for sure. The whole concept of how we honour our own place in the family system. It's really fascinating. Anyways, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. As you know, we cover just so many different topics and you know, from the very lighthearted to the heavier stuff sometimes. I'm going to be chatting to Sober Dave about his new book, One for the Road. I've known Dave for absolutely ages, since he first came along when he was only a few weeks into sobriety. And he came on along to one of my meetings. We were holding kind of events called Self-Care and Sobriety. And he came along to one of those, all kind of nervous and unsure. And of course, he's doing, you know, fantastic work now. So I'm going to be chatting to Sober Dave. If you ever have any suggestions of great guests for the podcast, then please let me know. Always happy to hear what you would like to suggest. Obviously, I want to give another reminder for the Sober Club. Check it out if you're interested in great content and connection and support, thesoberclub.com. And check out those couple of online group coaching courses that I'm starting in October, giving you all the tools and the tips to really make the sobriety stick. Because it's not the stopping drinking that's the hard bit, it's staying sober and actually starting to create the life that you do not need to escape from, rather than going into cross addictions and all the other stuff. Actually starting to like yourself is what it all comes back to, really. So have a look at that. And as I said before, you can always drop me a message at Janie Lee Grace. So stay in touch, stay connected. If you're doing this, if your early days, be inspired. Just know this is the best thing you will ever do for your health and well-being. I'm always happy to for you to tell me. If you want to tell someone, drop me a message and tell me, and I'll reply if I can, because we don't always want to tell the people closest to us. You may not be joined up with a community yet, so you're very welcome to tell me, and I'll be your cheerleader. Okay, we all need a cheerleader, right? That's what we do in the Sober Club. We just cheerlead each other. So I'll see you next time. Have a good week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability, and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.